I need to get back to the village, to Lyre. I dragged myself to my feet, find my Sims tucked haphazardly beneath my bed, and stagger to the cottage door. Outside, a freezing wind tears through the clearing, stirring the packed snow into wild, waist-high tornadoes. The ghosts wail and cluster at the sight of me, their anguish palpable.
Hello, little one.
One of the shades drifts close, so faded I get only the barest impression of her face.
Have you seen my lovey?
I know her. The Wisp, one of the first ghosts I met here. My voice when I speak is a rusty growl.
I'm sorry.
Elias.
Shaver appears at the edge of the clearing, a basket of winter herbs on her wrist. The Wisp, ever shy, vanishes.
You shouldn't be up and about.
What's wrong with me? I demand of the soul catcher. What happened?
You've been unconscious for a day.
Shaver ignores my obvious ire.
I reeled us here instead of windwalking. It is swifter, but more detrimental to a mortal body.
Liar, Mamie.
Stop, Elias.
Shaver sits at the base of a yew tree, settling into its exposed roots and taking a deep breath. The tree almost appears to curve around her, fitting itself to her body. She pulls a handful of greens from the basket and tears the leaves violently from their stems.
You nearly got yourself killed. Is that not enough?
You shouldn't have grabbed me like that.
I cannot hold back my anger, and she glares at me, her own temper rising.
I would have been fine. I need to get back to that village. You imbecile!
She casts her basket down.
The Bloodshrike had a dagger in her gauntlet. It was an inch away from your vitals. Ma'arthur tried to pull you back, but you did not heed him. If I had not arrived, I would be shouting at your ghost right now.
Her scowl is fierce.
I let you aid your friends despite my misgivings, and you squandered it.
You can't expect me to remain in the waiting place and never have any human contact, I say. I'll go mad. And Liar, I care for her, Shaver. I can't just...
Ah, Elias.
She rises and reaches for my hands. Though my skin is numb from the cold, I take no comfort from her warmth. She sighs, and her voice is heavy with shame.
Do you think I have never loved? I did, once. He was beautiful, brilliant. That love blinded me to my duties, sacred though they were. The world suffered for my love. It suffers still.
She draws breath raggedly, and around us the wails of the ghosts intensify, as if in response to her distress.
I understand your pain, truly. But for us, Elias, duty must reign over all else. Desire, sadness, loneliness. Love cannot live here. You chose the waiting place, and the waiting place chose you. Now you must give yourself to it, wholly. Body and soul.
Body and soul. A chill runs up my spine as I recall something Cain said to me long ago, that one day I'd have a chance at freedom.
True freedom of body and of soul.
Did he envision this, I wonder? Did he set me on the path to freedom, knowing that one day it would be wrenched from me? Was this always my destiny?
I need some time. A day, I say.
If I'm to be chained to this place for eternity, then I at least owe Lyre and Mamie a goodbye, though I've no idea what I'll say. Shaver pauses.
I'll give you a few hours, she finally says. After that, no more distractions. You have much to learn, Elias, and I do not know how much time I have to teach you. The moment you took the vow to become Soulcatcher, my power began to fade. I know.
I nudge her with my boot, smiling in an attempt to dispel the tension between us.
Every time you don't feel like doing the dishes, you remind me.
I mimic her sober voice.
Elias, my power fades, so make sure you sweep the front steps and bring in firewood and...
She chuckles.
As if you even know how to sweep.
A smile vanishes. Frantic lines form around her mouth, and her hands clench and unclench, like she's desperate for weapons she doesn't possess. The snow around us slows its swirling. The wind goes soft, as if cowed, and then ceases completely. The shadows in the trees deepen, so black they seem like a portal to another world.
Shaver, what the hell's is happening?
The Soulcatcher shudders, riven with dread.
Go inside the cabin, Elias.
Whatever's going on, we face it together.
She digs her fingers into my shoulders.
There is so much you do not yet know, and if you fail, the world will fall. This is but the beginning. Remember, sleep in the cottage. They cannot hurt you there. And seek the tribes, Elias. Long have they been my allies. Ask about the stories of the
Her voice chokes off as her back arches.
Bleeding Hells! Shaver!
The moon sets on the archer and the shield maiden.
Her voice changes, multiplies. It is a child's voice and an old woman's layered over her own, as if all the versions that Shaver was and ever could be are speaking at once.
The executioner has arisen. The traitor walks free. Beware. The Reaper approaches, flames in his wake, and he shall set this world alight, and so shall the great wrong be set right.
She flings her hand up to the sky, to constellations hidden behind thick snow clouds.
Shaver!
I shake her shoulders insistently.
Get her inside.
The cottage always soothes her. It's her only sanctuary in this sky's forsaken place. But when I try to pick her up, she throws me off.
Shaver, don't be so damned stubborn!
Remember all that I say before the end,
she whispers.
That is why he has come. That is what he wants from me. Swear it.
I swear.
She lifts her hands to my face. For once, her fingers are cold.
Soon you will learn the cost of your vow, my brother. I hope you do not think too ill of me.
She falls to her knees, knocking over the basket of herbs. The green and yellow leaves spill out, the bright color incongruous against the ashen snow. The clearing is quiet. Even the ghosts have gone silent.
That can't be right.
The thickest concentration of ghosts is always around the cabin. But the spirits are gone, every last one. In the forest to the west, where moments ago the shadows were only shadows, something stirs. The darkness moves, twisting as if in agony, until it writhes into a hooded figure cloaked in robes of purest night. From beneath the cowl, two tiny suns stare out at me. I have never seen him before. I have only heard him described. But I know him. Bleeding, burning hells, I know him. The Nightbringer.
Chapter 7. The Bloodshrike. A row of severed heads greets Dex, Avitas, and me as we pass beneath Antium's iron-studded main gate. Scholars mostly, but I spot marshals too. The streets are lined with dirty piles of slush, and a blanket of clouds lies thick over the city, depositing more snow. I ride past the grisly display, and Harper follows, but Dex stares at the heads, hands tight on his reins. His silence is unnerving. The interrogation of Tribe Scythe still haunts him. "Get to the barracks, Dex," I say. "I want reports on all active missions on my desk by midnight." My attention falls on two women loitering outside a nearby guard post. Courtesans. "And go distract yourself after. Get your mind off the raid."
"I do not frequent brothels," Dex says quietly, as he follows my gaze to the women. "Even if I did, it's not that easy for me, Shrike. And you know it."
I shoot Avitas Harper a glare. "Go away." When he's out of earshot, I turn to Dex. "Madam Hera's in Mundia Square, the House of Forgetting. Hera is discreet. She treats her women, and men, well." At Dex's hesitation, I lose my patience. "You're letting your guilt eat at you, and it cost us in the village," I say. "That raid was meant to get us something to use against Karras. We failed. Marcus won't be pleased. And it's my sister who will suffer that displeasure." "When I am dispirited," I go on, "I visit Hera's. It helps. Go or don't, doesn't matter to me. But stop being woeful and useless. I don't have the patience for it." Dex leaves, and Harper nudges his horse over.
"You frequent Hera's?"
There's something more than mere curiosity in his voice. "Reading lips again?"
"Only yours, Shrike."
Harper's green eyes drop to my mouth so quickly I almost miss it.
"Forgive my question. I assumed you had volunteers to meet your needs. The previous Shrike second in command did sometimes procure courtesans for him. If you need me to..."
My cheeks grow warm at the image that conveys. "Stop talking, Harper," I say, "while you're behind." We gallop ahead toward the palace, its pearlescent sheen a bare-faced lie that hides the oppressiveness within. The outer gates are bustling at this hour, illustrian courtiers and Mercator hangers-on all jockeying to get into the throne room to obtain the Emperor's favour.
"An attack on Marin would go a long way in..." "Fleet is already engaged. Veturia will crush them."
I suppress a sigh at the never-ending machinations of the Paters. It drove my father to distraction the way they schemed. When they see me, they fall silent. I take grim pleasure in their discomfort. Harper and I cut through the courtiers quickly. The men in their long, fur-edged cloaks back away from the slush kicked up by my mount. The women, sparkling in court finery, watch surreptitiously. No one meets my gaze. Swine. Not one of them offered a word of remembrance in honor of my family after Marcus executed them. Not even privately. My mother, father, and sister died as traitors, and nothing can change that. Marcus wanted me to feel shame, but I do not. My father gave his life trying to save the Empire, and one day that fact will be known. But now, it is as if my family never existed, as if their lives were mere hallucinations. The only people who have dared to mention my parents to me are Livia, a scholar hag I haven't seen in weeks, and a scholar girl whose head should be in a sack at my waist right now. I hear the buzz of voices in the throne room long before I see its double doors. As I enter, every soldier salutes. They've learned by now what happens to those who don't. Marcus sits rigid on his throne, big hands fisted on the armrests, masked face emotionless. His blood-red cape pools onto the floor, reflecting luridly off his silver and copper armor. The weapons at his side are razor sharp, to the chagrin of the older Illustrian paters, who appear soft beside their emperor. The commandant is not here, but Livia is, her face as impassive as a mask's as she perches on her own throne beside Marcus. I hate that she is forced to sit here, but still, relief rushes through me. At least she's alive. She is resplendent in a lavender gown heavy with gold embroidery. My sister's back is straight, her face powdered to hide the bruise on her cheek. Her ladies in waiting, yellow-eyed cousins of Marcus, cluster a few feet away. They are plebeians, plucked from their village by my sister as a gesture of goodwill toward Marcus and his family. And I suspect that, like me, they find court insufferable. Marcus fixes his attention on me, despite the obviously distressed Mariner ambassador standing before him. As I approach, the Emperor's shoulders twitch.
You don't need to warn me, damn you, he mutters.
The ambassador furrows his brow, and I realize that Marcus isn't responding to the man. He's talking to himself. At the Mariner's confusion, the Emperor beckons him near.
Tell your doddering king that he needn't cower, Marcus says. The Empire is not interested in a war with Marin. If he needs a token of our goodwill, have him provide me a list of his enemies. I'll send him their heads as a gift.
The ambassador pales and backs away, and Marcus gestures me forward. I do not acknowledge Livia. Let the court think we are not close. She has enough to deal with without half of these vultures trying to take advantage of her relationship with me. Emperor, I kneel and bow my head. Though I've been doing so for months now, it hasn't gotten any easier. Beside me, Harper does the same.
Clear the room, Marcus growls.
When the Illustrians do not move quickly enough, he flings a dagger at the nearest one. Guards usher the Illustrians away, and the lot of them are unable to get out fast enough. Marcus smiles at the sight, his harsh chuckle jarring against the fear that pervades the room. Livia rises and gathers the folds of her dress gracefully. Faster, sister, I think to myself, get out of here. But before she steps down from her throne, Marcus grabs her wrist.
You stay.
He forces her into her seat. My sister's gaze meets mine for an infinitesimal moment. I sense no fear. Only warning. Avitas steps back, a silent witness. Marcus pulls a roll of parchment from his armor and flings it at me. The crest flashes in the air as it flies to my hand, and I recognize the K with crossed swords beneath it. The commandant's seal.
Go on, he says. Read it.
Beside him, Livia watches, wariness in her body, though she's learned to train it from her face. My lord emperor, the Karkan warlock Grimar has intensified the raids on Navium. We need more men. The paters of Navium are in agreement. Their seals are below. A half legion should be sufficient. Duty first, unto death. General Carus Veturia. She has an entire legion down there, I say. She should be able to put down a paltry barbarian rebellion with 5,000 men.
And yet,
Marcus yanks another parchment from within his armor, and another, flinging them all at me.
From paters Aquitius, Tatius, Argus, Modius, Vasilius. The list goes on, he says, all requesting aid. Their proxies here in Antium have been hounding me since Karras's message came in. 300 civilians are dead, and those barbarian dogs have a fleet approaching the port. Whoever this Grimar is, he's trying to take the damn city.
But surely Karras can...
She's up to something, you dim bitch!
Marcus's roar echoes through the room, and in two steps his face is inches from mine. Harper tenses behind me, and Livia half rises from her throne. I give my head the slightest shake. I can handle him, little sister. Marcus stabs his fingers into my skull.
Get it through your thick head. If you'd taken care of her like I ordered, this wouldn't be happening. Shut it, damn you!
He whirls, but Livia hasn't spoken. His gaze is fixed on the middle distance between himself and my sister. And I recall, uneasily, Livia's suspicion that Marcus sees the ghost of his twin, Zack, murdered months ago during the trials. Before I can think on it, Marcus steps so close my mask ripples. His eyes look as though they might pop from his head.
You didn't ask for assassination, my lord. I ease away very slowly. You asked for destruction, and destruction takes time.
I asked!
He leashes his rage, his sudden calm more chilling than his anger.
For competence.
You've had 3 months. She should have worms crawling out of her eye sockets by now. Instead, she's stronger than ever, while the Empire grows weaker. So tell me, Bloodshrike, what are you going to do about her?
I have information. I put every bit of conviction I possess into my voice, my body. I am certain I will bring her down. Enough to destroy her.
What information?
I can't tell him what Elias revealed about Quinn. It's not useful enough, and even if it was, Marcus would question me further. If he learns I had Lyra and Elias in my grasp and lost them, he'll break my sister in half.
The walls have ears, my lord, I say. Not all are friendly.
Marcus considers me. Then he turns, drags my sister to her feet, and shoves her into the side of her own throne, wrenching her arm behind her back. Her stillness is that of a woman who has quickly grown used to violence, and who will do what she must to survive it. I clench my hands around my weapons, and Livy catches my eyes. Her terror, not for herself but for me, checks my temper. Remember that the more anger you show, the more he'll make her suffer. Even as I force myself to be logical, I hate that I am. I hate myself for not lopping off those hands that have hurt her, not cutting out that tongue that has called her foul names. I hate that I cannot hand her a blade so she can do it herself. Marcus tilts his head.
Your sister plays oud so well,
he says.
She's entertained many of my guests, charmed them even, with the beauty of her musicianship. But I'm sure she can find other ways to entertain them.
He leans close to Livia's ear, and her gaze drifts far away, her mouth hard.
Do you sing, my love? I'm certain you have a beautiful voice.
Slowly, deliberately, he draws back one of her fingers. Further, further, further. This cannot be borne. I step forward and feel a vice-like grip on my arm.
You'll make it worse, Avitas murmurs in my ear.
Livia's finger cracks. She gasps, but makes no other sound.
That, Marcus says, is for your failure.
He grabs another of Livia's fingers, bending it back so carefully that I know he is taking joy from each second of it. Sweat beads on her forehead, and her face is white as bone. When her finger finally breaks, she whimpers,
and bites her lip.
My brave bird.
Marcus smiles at her, and I want to rip his throat out.
You know I like it better when you scream.
When he turns back to me, his smile is gone.
And that is a reminder of what's to come if you fail me again.
Marcus flings my sister onto her throne. Her head knocks against the rough stone. She shudders and cradles one hand, but her hatred blazes out at Marcus before she tamps it down, her face composed once more.
You will go to Navium, Shrike, Marcus says. You will learn what the bitch of Blackcliff is planning. You will destroy her, piece by piece, and you will do it quickly. I want her head on a spear by the Grain Moon, and I want the Empire begging for it to happen. 5 months. That's enough time even for you, is it not? You will update me through the drums every 3 days. And, he glances at Livia, if I'm not satisfied with your progress, I'll keep breaking your little sister's bones until she's nothing but jagged edges.
Chapter 8. Liar. For hours I run, cloaking myself from a maddening number of martial patrols, holding my invisibility until my head throbs and my legs tremble from cold and exhaustion. My mind spins with worry for Elias, for Darin, for Arthia. Even if they are safe, what in the skies will we do now that the Empire has caught on to the raids? The marshals will flood the countryside with soldiers. We cannot continue. The risk is too great. Never mind. Just get to the camp and hope to the skies that Darin got there too. At midnight, a day after the raid, I finally spot the tall, naked oak that shelters our tent, its branches grousing in the wind. Horses nicker and a familiar figure paces beneath the tree. Darin, I nearly sob in relief. My strength has left me and I find I cannot call out. I simply drop into visibility. When I do, darkness flashes across my vision. I see a shadowy room, a hunched figure. A moment later, the vision is gone and I stumble toward the camp. Darin spies me and runs, pulling me into a hug. Arthia bursts from the round fur tent my brother and I use as shelter. Anger and relief mingling on her face. You're a bleeding idiot, girl. Liar, what happened? Did you find Mamie? Are the prisoners safe? Did Elias... Arthia holds up a hand. Mamie's with a healer from Tribe Ner, the Zoldara says. My people will get the prisoners to the tribal lands. I meant to join them, but... She glances at Darin, and I understand. She did not wish to leave him alone. She did not know if I'd return. I tell them swiftly of the Blood Shrike's ambush and Elias's disappearance. Did you see Elias? Please, let him be all right. Did he come out of the forest? Arthur shudders as she looks over her shoulder to the towering wall of trees that marks the western border of the waiting place. Darin only shakes his head. I glower at the trees, wishing I had the power to burn a path through to the djinn's cabin. Why did you snatch him away, Shaver? Why do you torment him so? Come inside. Darin tugs me into the tent and tucks a woolen blanket from his sleeping roll around my shoulders. You'll catch your death. Arthia pulls away the fur covering the hole at the top of the tent and stirs the ashes of our small cook fire until her brown face is lit bronze. Long minutes later, I'm shoveling down the potato and squash stew Darin has made. It's overcooked, with so much red pepper in it that I nearly choke. Darin was always hopeless in the kitchen. Our raiding days are over, Arthia says. But if you wish to keep fighting the Empire, then come with me. Join Tribe Ner. The tribeswoman pauses, considering. Permanently. My brother and I exchange a glance. Tribespeople only accept new family members through marriage or the adoption of children. To be invited to join a tribe is no small thing, and by the Zoldara, no less. I reach for Arthia's hand, stunned at her generosity, but she waves me off. You're practically family anyway, Arthia says, and you know me, girl. I want something in return. She turns to my brother. Many died to save you, Darin of Sera. The time has come for you to begin forging Seric steel. I can procure you materials. Skies know the tribes need as much help as we can get. My brother flexes his hand as he always does when the phantom pains of his missing fingers plague him. His face goes pale, his lips thin. The demons within awaken. I want so desperately for Darin to speak, to accept Arthia's offer. It might be the only chance we have to continue fighting the Empire. But when I turn to him, he is leaving the tent, muttering about needing air. What news from your spies? I say quickly to Arthia, hoping to shift her attention from my brother. The marshals have not drawn down their forces? They sent another legion into the tribal desert from Atella's Gap, Arthia says. They've arrested hundreds around Nur on false charges, graft and transporting contraband, and skies know what else. Rumor is that they're planning to send the prisoners to Empire cities to be sold as slaves. The tribes are protected, I say. The treaty with Emperor Tyus has held for 5 centuries. Emperor Marcus doesn't care a fig about that treaty, Arthia frowns. That's not the worst of it. In Saad, a legionnaire killed the Kehani of Tribe Ali. I cannot hide my slack-jawed shock. Kehanis are the keepers of tribal stories and history, second in rank only to the Zoldars. Killing one is a declaration of war. Tribe Ali attacked the closest martial garrison in retaliation, Arthia says. It's what the Empire wanted. The commanding mask came down like a hammer out of the hells, and now all of Tribe Ali is either dead or in prison. Tribe Sayad and Tribe Fozi have sworn vengeance on the Empire. Their soldiers ordered attacks on Empire villages. Nearly 100 marshals dead at last count. And not just soldiers. She gives me a significant look. If the tribes turn on martial innocents, children, civilians, the elderly, the Empire will hit back hard. They're provoking us. Arthia peers out at the sky to gauge the time. Weakening us. We need that steel, Lyra. Think on my offer. She pulls on her cloak to leave, pausing at the flap of the tent. But think quickly. A strangeness taints the air. I can feel it in my bones. It's not just the marshals, I fear. Arthia's warning plagues me all night. Not long before dawn, I give up on sleep and slip outside the tent to where my brother sits watch. The ghosts of the waiting place are restive, angered, no doubt, by our presence. Their anguished cries join with the howling wind out of the north, an icy, hair-raising chorus. I pull my blanket close as I drop next to my brother. We sit in silence, watching the treetops of the waiting place brighten from black to blue as the eastern sky pales. After a time, Darin speaks. You want to know why I won't make the weapons?
You don't have to tell me if you don't wish to.
My brother bunches his fists and opens them, a habit he's had since we were little. The middle and ring fingers of his left dominant hand are sheared off. The materials are easy enough to get, he says. The wails of the ghosts intensify, and he raises his voice. It's the making that's complicated. The mixture of the metals, the heat of the flame, how the steel is folded, when the edge is cooled, the way the blade is polished. I remember most of it, but...
He squints as if trying to see something just out of sight.
I've forgotten so much. In Koff prison, in the death cells, whole weeks disappeared. I can't remember Father's face anymore. Or Nan's.
I can barely hear him over the ghosts.
And what if your friend Izzy died for nothing? What if Afia's family died for nothing? What if Elias swore himself to an eternity as soul catcher for nothing? What if I make the steel, and it breaks?
I could tell him that would never happen, but Darin always knows when I'm lying. I take my brother's left hand. It is calloused, strong. There's only one way we can find out, Darin, I say. But we won't do it until... I'm interrupted by a particularly shrill cry from the forest. The tops of the trees ripple, and the earth groans. Slips of white gather amid the trunks closest to us, their cries peaking.
What's gotten into them?
Darin winces at the sound. Usually, ignoring the ghost is easy enough for us. But right now, even I want to clap my hands over my ears. Which is when I realize that the ghost's cries are not without meaning. There are words buried beneath their pain. One word, specifically.
Liar, liar, liar.
My brother hears it too. He reaches for his sim, but his voice is calm, like it used to be before Koff.
Remember what Elias said? You can't trust them. They're howling to rattle us.
Listen to them,
I whisper.
Listen, Darin.
Your fault, liar.
The ghosts press up against the unseen border of the waiting place, their forms blending into one another to form a thick, choking mist.
He's close now.
Who? I move toward the trees, ignoring my brother's protests. I've never entered the forest without Elias by my side. I do not know if I can.
Do you speak of Elias? Is he all right?
Death approaches because of you. My dagger is suddenly slippery in my grasp.
Explain yourselves,
I call out. My feet carry me close enough to the tree line that I can see the path Elias takes when he meets us here. I've never been to Elias in Shaver's cabin, but he's told me that it sits at the end of this trail, no more than a league beyond the tree line. Our camp is here because of that path. It's the fastest way for Elias to reach us.
There's something wrong in there, I say to Darin. Something's happened.
It's just ghosts being ghosts, liar, Darin says. They want to lure you in and drive you crazy.
But you and I have never been driven mad by the ghosts, have we?
At that, my brother falls silent. Neither of us knows why the waiting place doesn't set us on edge as badly as it does others, like the tribes or marshals, all of whom give it a wide berth.
Have you ever seen so many spirits this close to the border, Darin?
The ghosts appear to multiply by the second.
It cannot be just to torment me. Something has happened to Elias. Something is wrong.
I feel a pull that I cannot explain, a compulsion to move toward the forest of dusk. I hurry to the tent and gather my things.
You don't have to come with me.
Darin's already grabbing his pack.
Where you go, I go, he says. But that's a big forest. He could be anywhere in there.
He's not far.
That strange instinct pulls at me, a hook in my belly.
I am certain of it.
When we reach the trees, I expect resistance, but all I find are ghosts packed so densely that I can barely see through them.
He's here. He's come. Because of you. Because of what you did.
I force myself to ignore the spirits and follow the scanty trail. After a time, the ghosts thin out. When I look back, a palpable fear ripples through their ranks. Darin and I exchange a glance. What in the skies would a ghost fear? With every step, it is harder to breathe. This is not my first time in the waiting place. When Darin and I began the caravan raids a few months ago, Elias wind-walked us across from Marin. The forest was never welcoming, but nor was it so oppressive. Fear lashes at me, and I move faster. The trees are smaller here, and through the open patches, a clearing appears, along with the sloped grey roof of a cottage. Darin grabs my arm, his finger on his lips, and pulls me to the ground. We inch forward with painstaking care. Ahead of us, a woman pleads. Another voice curses in a familiar baritone. Relief pours through me. Elias. The relief is short-lived. The woman's voice goes quiet. The trees shudder violently, and a blur of dark hair and brown skin shoots into view. Shava. She locks her fingers into my shoulder and drags me to my feet.
Your answers lie in Adisa.
I wince and try to squirm away, but she holds me with a djinn's strength.
With the beekeeper. But beware, for he is cloaked in lies and shadow, like you. Find him at your peril, child, for you will lose much. Even as you save us all.
Her body is jerked away, dragged as if by an invisible hand, back to the clearing. My heart thunders. Oh no. Skies, no.
Liar of Sarah.
I would recognize that ophidian hiss anywhere. It is the sea awakening, and the earth shuddering away from itself.
Always appearing. Where you are not wanted.
Darin cries a warning, but I stride forward into the clearing, caution overcome by rage. Elias's armored form is pinned against a tree, every muscle straining against invisible bonds. He thrashes, an animal in a trap, fists clenched as the whole of his body leans toward the center of the clearing. Shava kneels, black hair brushing the ground, skin waxy. Her face is unlined, but the devastation emanating from her feels ancient. The Nightbringer, cloaked in darkness, stands above her. The sickle blade in his shadow hand glows as if made of poison-dipped diamonds. He holds it with light fingers, but his body tenses. He means to use it. A snarl erupts from my throat. I must do something. I must stop him. But I find I can no longer move. The magic that ensnares Elias has gripped Darin and me, too.
Nightbringer, Shava whispers. Forgive my wrong. I was young.
Her voice fades to a choke. The Nightbringer, silent, brushes his fingers across Shaver's forehead like a father giving his benediction. Then he stabs her through the heart. Shaver's body seizes once, her arms windmilling, her body jerking up, as if yearning toward the blade, and her mouth opens. I expect a shriek, a scream. Instead, words pour out.
One piece remains, and beware the reaper at the gates. The sparrows will drown, and none will know it. The past shall burn, and none will slow it. The dead will rise, and none can survive. The child will be bathed in blood, but alive. The pearl will crack, the cold will enter. The butcher will break, and none will hold her. The ghost will fall, her flesh will wither. By the grain moon, the king will have his answer. By the grain moon, the forgotten will find their master.
Shaver's chin falls. Her lashes flutter like a butterfly's wings, and the blade embedded in her chest drips blood that is as red as mine. Her face goes slack, and her body bursts into flame, a flash of blinding fire that fizzles into ashes after only seconds. No! Elias shouts, two streaks of wet on either side of his face. Do not make the Nightbringer angry, Elias! I want to scream. Do not get yourself killed! A cloud of cinders swirls about the Nightbringer, all that is left of Shaver. He looks up for the first time at Elias, cocks his head and advances, dripping sickle in hand. Distantly, I remember Elias telling me what he learned from the Soul Catcher, that the star protects those who have touched it. The Nightbringer cannot kill Elias, but he can hurt him, and by the skies I will not have anyone else I care about hurt. I hurl myself forward and bounce back. The Nightbringer ignores me, comfortable in his power. You will not hurt Elias. You will not. Some feral darkness rises within me and takes control of my body. I felt it once before, months ago, when I fought the Nightbringer outside Koff Prison. An animal cry explodes from my lips. This time, when I push ahead, I get through. Darin is a half step behind, and the Nightbringer flicks his wrist. My brother freezes, but the djinn's magic has no effect on me. I leap between the Nightbringer and Elias, dagger out. Don't you dare touch him, I say. The Nightbringer's sun eyes flare as he looks first at me, then at Elias, reading what is between us. I think of how he betrayed me. Monster! How close is he to setting the djinn free? Shaver's prophecy answered the question moments ago. One piece of the star left. Does the Nightbringer know where it is? What does Shaver's death gain him? But as he observes me, I remember the love that roiled within him, and the hate as well. I remember the vicious war waged between the two, and the desolation left in their wake. The Nightbringer's shoulder ripples as if he is unsettled. Can he read my thoughts? He shifts his attention over my shoulder to Elias.
Elias Veturius.
The djinn leans over me, and I cringe back, pressing against Elias's chest, caught between the two of them, my friend's pounding heart and despair at Shaver's death and the Nightbringer's eldritch wrath, fueled by a millennium of cruelty and suffering. The djinn doesn't bother looking at me before he speaks.
She tasted sweet, boy, he says. Like dew. And a clear dawn.
Behind me, Elias stills and takes a steadying breath. He meets the Nightbringer's fiery stare, his face paling in shock at what he sees there. Then he growls, a sound that seems to rise out of the very earth. Shadows twist up like vines of ink beneath his skin. Every muscle in his shoulders, his chest, his arms strains until he is tearing free of his invisible bonds. He raises his hands, a shockwave bursting from his skin, knocking me on my back. The Nightbringer sways before righting himself.
Ah, he observes. The pup has a bite. All the better.
I cannot see his face within that hood, but I hear the smile in his voice. He rises up as wind floods the clearing.
There is no joy in destroying a weak foe.
He turns his attention east, towards something far out of sight. Whispers hiss on the air as if he's communicating with someone. Then the wind snatches at him and, as in the forest outside Koff, he disappears. But this time, instead of silence to mark his passing, the ghosts who fled to the borders of the waiting place pour into the clearing, swarming me.
You liar, this is because of you. Shaver is dead, Elias is condemned. The djinn, a breath from victory.
Because of me. There are so many. The truth of their words breaks over me like a net of chains. I try to stand against it, but I cannot, for the spirits do not lie. One piece remains. The Nightbringer must find only one more piece of the star before he is able to free his kin. He is close now, close enough that I can no longer deny it, close enough that I must act. The ghosts tornado around me, so angry I fear they will tear off my skin. But Elias cuts through them and lifts me to my feet. Darin is beside me, grabbing my pack from where it has fallen, glaring at the ghosts as they ease back into the trees, barely restrained. Before I even say the words, my brother nods. He heard what Shava said. He knows what we must do. We're going to Edessa. I say it anyway. To stop him. To finish this.
Chapter 9. Elias. The full burden of the waiting place descends like a boulder dropping onto my back. The forest is part of me, and I can feel the borders, the ghosts, the trees. It's as if a living map of the place has been imprinted on my mind. Shaver's absence is at the heart of that burden. I gaze at the fallen basket of herbs that she'll never add to the korma, that she'll never eat, in the house she'll never step foot in again.
Elias, the ghosts.
Lyra draws close. The usually mournful spirits have transformed into violent shades. I need M'Arthur's magic to silence them. I need to bond with him the way Shaver wanted me to. But when I grasp at M'Arthur with my will, I feel only a trace of the magic before it fades.
Elias?
Despite the shrieking ghosts, Lyra takes my hand, her lips drawn down in concern.
I'm so sorry about Shaver. Is she really?
I nod. She's gone.
It was so fast.
Somehow I am comforted by the fact that someone is as stunned as I am.
Are you? Will you be?
She shakes her head.
Of course you're not all right. Skies, how could you be?
A groan from Darin pulls our attention away from each other. The ghosts circle him, darting close and whispering Skies know what. Bleeding hells. I need to get Lyra and Darin out of here. If you want to get to Edessa, I say, the fastest way is through the forest. You'll lose months going around.
Right.
Lyra pauses and furrows her brow.
But, Elias...
If we speak more of Shaver, I think something inside me will break. She was here, and now she's gone, and nothing can change that. The permanence of death will always feel like a betrayal. But raging against it when my friends are in danger is the act of a fool. I must move. I must make sure Shaver didn't die for nothing. Lyra is still speaking when I take Darin's hand and begin to windwalk. She goes quiet as the forest fades past us. She squeezes my hand, and I know that she understands my silence. I cannot travel with Shaver's swiftness, but we reach one of the bridges over the river Dusk after only a quarter hour, and seconds later, we're beyond it. I angle northeast, and as we move through the trees, Lyra peeks at me from beneath the wing of hair that has fallen over her eye. I want to speak to her.
Damn the Nightbringer, I want to say. I don't care what he said. I only care that you are all right.
We'll be there soon, I begin, before another voice speaks, a hateful chorus that is instantly recognizable.
You will fail, usurper.
The djinn, but their grove is miles away. How are they projecting their voices this far?
Filth, Your world will fall. Our king has already thwarted you. This is just the beginning.
Piss off, I snarl. I think of the whispers I heard just before the Nightbringer disappeared. He was giving these fiery monsters orders, no doubt. The djinn laugh.
Our kind are powerful, mortal. You cannot replace a djinn. You cannot hope to succeed as soul catcher.
I ignore them, hoping they'll shut the hells up. Did they ever do this to Shaeva? Were they always bellowing in her head, and she just never told me? My chest aches when I think of the soul catcher. And of so many others. Tristus, Demetrius, Leander, the Bloodshrike, my grandfather. Are all those who get close to me fated to suffer? Darin shivers, gritting his teeth against the onslaught of the ghosts. Lyra's skin is grey, though she walks on without a word of complaint.
In the end, they will fade. You will endure. Love cannot live here.
Lyra's hand is cool and small in mine. Her pulse flutters against my fingers, a tenuous reminder of her mortality. Even if she survives to be an old woman, her years are nothing against the life of a soul catcher. She will die and I will abide, becoming less and less human as time passes.
There,
Lyra points ahead. The trees thin. And through them I spot the cottage where Darin recovered from his injuries at Koth months ago now. When we reach the tree line, I release the siblings. Darin grabs me and pulls me into a rough hug.
I don't know how to thank you,
he begins, but I stop him. Stay alive, I say. That'll be thanks enough. I'll have enough problems here without your ghost showing up. Darin offers a flash of a smile before glancing at his sister and prudently heading for the cottage. Lyra twists her hands together, not looking at me. Her hair has come free from its braid as it always does, in fat, unruly curls. I reach for one, unable to help myself.
I have something for you.
I rummage around in a pocket and pull out a piece of wood. It is unfinished. The carvings on it rough. You reach for your old armlet sometimes. I feel ridiculous all of a sudden. Why would I give her this hideous thing? It looks like a 6-year-old made it.
It's not finished, but, I thought...
It's perfect.
Her fingers brush mine as she takes it. That touch. 10 hells. I steady my breath and crush the desire that thrums in my veins. She slides the armlet on, and seeing her in that familiar pose, one hand resting on the cuff, it feels right.
Thank you.
Watch your back in Odessa. I turn to practicalities. They are easier to speak of than this feeling in my chest, like my heart is being carved out of me and lit on fire. The mariners will know your face. And if they know what Darin can do. I catch her smile and realize that, like a fool, I'm telling her things she already knows.
I thought we would have more time, she says. I thought we'd find a way out for you, that Shaeva would release you from your vow, or...
She looks like I feel, broken. I need to let her go. Fight the Nightbringer, I should say. Win, find joy, remember me. But why should she come back here? Her future is in the world of the living.
Say it, Elias,
my logic screams.
Make it easier for both of you. Don't be pathetic.
Lyra, you should... I don't want to let you go. Not yet.
She traces my jaw with a light hand. Her fingers lingering on my mouth. She wants me. I can see it, feel it.
and it makes me desire her even more desperately. Not so soon. Neither do I. I pull her into my arms, reveling in the warmth of her body against mine, the curve of her hip beneath my hand. She tucks her head beneath my chin, and I breathe her in. Martha tugs at me, harsh and sudden. Against my will, I sway back toward the forest. No, no! Ghosts be damned. Martha be damned. Waiting place be damned. I grab her hand and pull her toward me, and as if she was waiting for it, she closes her eyes and rises up on her toes. Her hands tangle in my hair, drawing me tightly toward her. Her lips are soft and lush, and when she presses every curve into me, I nearly lose my feet. I hear nothing but liar, see nothing but liar, feel nothing but liar. My mind races forward to me laying her down on the forest floor, spending hours exploring every inch of her body. For a moment, I see what we could have had. Liar and her books and patience, and me and a school that taught more than death and duty. A little one with gold eyes and glowing brown skin. The white in Liar's hair one day, and the way her eyes will mellow and deepen and grow wiser. You are cruel, Elias, she whispers against my mouth. To give a girl all she desires, only to tear it away. This isn't the end for us, Liar of Sarah. I cannot give up what we could have. I don't care what bleeding vow I made. Do you hear me? This is not our end. You've never been a liar. She dashes her hands against the wetness in her eyes. Don't start now. Her back is straight as she walks away, and when she reaches the cottage, Darin, waiting outside, rises. She goes past him quickly, and he follows. I watch her until she is just a shadow on the horizon. Turn around, I think. Just once. Turn around. She doesn't. And perhaps it's just as well.
Chapter 10. The Bloodshrike. I spend the rest of the day in the Black Guard barracks, reading through spy reports. Most are mundane. A prisoner transfer that could guarantee the loyalty of a Makeda house. An investigation into the death of two illustrian paters. I pay closest attention to the reports out of Tiberim. With the approach of spring, the Karkin clans are expected to come pouring out of the mountains, raiding and reaving. But my spies say the Karkins are quiet. Perhaps their leader, this Grimar, committed too many forces to the attack on Navium. Perhaps Tiberim is uncommonly lucky. Or perhaps those blue-faced bastards are up to something. I request reports from all the northern garrisons. By the time the midnight bells ring, I am exhausted and my desk is only half clear. But I stop anyway, foregoing a meal despite the rumbling in my belly, and pulling on my boots and a cloak. Sleep will not come, not when the crack of Livia's bones still rings through my head. Not when I'm wondering what ambush the Commandant will have waiting for me in Navium. The hallway outside my quarters is silent and dark. Most of the Black Guard should be asleep, but there's always at least a half dozen men on watch. I don't want to be followed. I suspect the Commandant has spies among my men. I head for the armory, where a hidden passage leads into the heart of the city. Shrike. The whisper is soft, but I jump anyway, cursing at the sight of the green eyes shining like a cat's from across the hall. Avitas, I hiss, why are you lurking out here?
Don't take the armory tunnel, he says. Peter Cecilius has a man watching the route. I'll have him taken care of, but there wasn't time tonight. Are you spying on me? You're predictable, Shrike. Anytime Marcus hurts her, you take a walk. Captain Dex reminded me that it's against regulations for the Shrike to be unaccompanied. So here I am. I know Harper is simply carrying out his duties. I have been irresponsible, wandering the city at night without any guards. Still, I'm vexed. Harper serenely ignores my discontent and nods to the laundry closet. There must be another passageway there. Once we're inside the narrow space, my armor clanks against his, and I grimace, hoping no one hears us. Skies know what they would say at finding us pressed together in a dark closet. My face heats thinking of it. Thank the skies for my mask. Where's the bleeding entrance? It's just... He reaches around me and up, rummaging through uniforms. I lean back, catching a V-shaped glimpse of the smooth brown skin at his throat. His scent is light, barely there, but warm, like cinnamon and cedar. I take a deeper sniff, glancing up at him as I do, to find him staring at me, eyebrows raised. You smell not unpleasant, I say stiffly. I was simply noticing. Of course, Shrike. His mouth quirks a little. Is that a bleeding smile? Shall we? As if sensing my annoyance, Harper pushes open a section of the closet behind me and moves through quickly. We do not speak again as we wend our way through the secret passageways of the Black Guard barracks and out into the chill spring night. Harper drops back when we are above ground, and I soon forget he is near. Hood pulled low, I ghost through Antium's lower level, through the crowded scholars' sector, past inns and bustling taprooms, barracks and plebeian-heavy neighbourhoods. The guards at the upper gate do not see me as I pass into the city's second tier, a trick I play to keep my edge. I find myself toying with my father's ring as I walk, the ring of Jen's Aquila. Sometimes, when I look at it, I still see the blood that coated it, the blood that spattered my face and armor when Marcus cut father's throat. Don't think about that. I spin it round, trying to take comfort from its presence. Give me the wisdom of all the Aquilas, I find myself thinking. Help me defeat my foe. I soon reach my destination, a wooded park outside the Hall of Records. At this hour, I expected the hall to be dark, but a dozen lamps are lit, and the archivists are still hard at work. The long pillared building is spectacular for its size and simplicity, but I take comfort from it because of what is within. Records of lineages, births, deaths, dispatches, treaties, trade agreements, and laws. If the Emperor is the heart of the Empire, and the people are its lifeblood, then the Hall of Records is its memory. No matter how hopeless I feel, coming here reminds me of all the marshals have built in the 500 years since the Empire was founded.
All empires fall, Bloodshrike.
When Cain steps from the shadows, I reach for my blade. I have thought many times about what I would do if I saw the Augur again. Always, I saw myself remaining calm, silent. I would hold myself aloof from him. I would give him nothing of my mind. My intentions vanish at the sight of his accursed face. The passion with which I want to break his frail neck astounds me. I didn't know I could have this much hate in me. Hannah's pleading fills my ears. Helly, I'm sorry. And my mother's calm words as she knelt for her death. Strength, my girl. My father's ring cuts into my palm. But as I draw the blade, my arm freezes and drops, forced to my side by the Augur. The lack of control is enraging and unsettling.
Such anger, he murmurs.
You destroyed my life. You could have saved them. You monster!
What of you, Bloodshrike? Are you not a monster?
Kane's hood is low, but I can still make out the inquisitive gleam of his gaze.
You're different, I spit. You're like them, the Commandant, or Marcus, or the Nightbringer.
Ah, but the Nightbringer is no monster, child, though he may do monstrous things. He is cloven by sorrow, and thus locked in a righteous battle to amend a grievous wrong. Much like you, I think you are more similar than you know. You could learn much from the Nightbringer, if he deigned to teach you.
I don't bleeding want anything to do with any of you, I hiss. You are a monster, even if you...
But you are a paragon of perfection?
Kane tilts his head, appearing genuinely curious.
You live and breathe and eat and sleep on the backs of those less fortunate. Your entire existence is due to the oppression of those you view to be lesser. But why you, Bloodshrike? Why did fate see fit to make you the oppressor instead of the oppressed? What is the meaning of your life?
The Empire. I shouldn't answer. I should ignore him. But a lifetime of reverence dies hard. That is the meaning of my life.
Perhaps,
Kane shrugs, a strangely human gesture.
I did not, in truth, come here to argue philosophy with you. I came with a message.
He pulls an envelope from his robes. At the sight of the seal, a bird winging over a shining city, I snatch it from him. Livia. As I open it, I keep one eye on the auger.
Come to me, sister. I need you. Yours always, Livia.
When did she send this? I scan the message quickly. And why did she send it with you? She could have...
She asked, and I acquiesced. Anyone else would have been followed, and that would not have aligned with my interests, or hers.
Kane touches my masked brow gently.
Fare thee well, Bloodshrike. I will see you once more, before your end.
He steps back and vanishes, and Harper appears out of the dark, jaw clenched. Apparently, he likes the augers as much as I do.
You can keep them out of your head, he says. The Nightbringer, too. I can show you how, if you like.
Fine, I say, already making for the palace. On the way to Navium. We soon reach the balcony of Livy's apartments, and I do not spot a single soldier. Avatas is stationed below, and I'm reminding myself to yell at Farris, who captains Livy's personal guard, when the air shifts. I'm not alone.
Peace, Shrike.
Farris Candolin steps out of the arched doorway that leads into Livy's quarters, his hands up, short blonde hair a mess.
She's waiting for you.
You should have bleeding told her it was stupid to summon me.
I don't tell the Empress what to do, Farris says. I just try to make sure no one hurts her while she's doing it.
Something about how he says it makes the hair on my neck rise, and in two steps I have a dagger at his throat.
Watch it with her, Farris, I say. You flirt like your life depends on it, but if Marcus suspects she is disloyal, he will kill her, and the illustrian paters will believe he had every right to do it.
Don't worry about me, Farris says. I've got a lovely Makeda girl waiting for me in the Weaver's district. Most spectacular hips I've ever seen. Would have been there by now.
He glares at me until I release him.
But someone needed to be on duty.
Two people, I say. Who's your backup? A figure steps into the light from the shadows beside the door, a thrice-broken nose, deep brown skin, and blue eyes that always sparkle, even beneath the silver mask.
Raelius? 10 hells, is that you?
Silvio Raelius salutes, before flashing a grin that made knees weak at illustrian parties across Serra for nearly all of my teenage years, including my knees, before I learned better. Elias and I hero-worshipped him, though he is only 2 years older. He was one of the few upperclassmen who wasn't a monster to the younger students.
Bloodshrike, he salutes. My sim is yours.
Words as pretty as that smile. I don't return his, and he realizes then that he's dealing with the Bloodshrike and not a young cadet from Blackcliff. Make them true. Protect her, or your life is forfeit. I slip past them both and into Livy's bedroom. As my eyes adjust, the floorboards near a tapestry creak. Cloth whispers as the contours of the room come into focus. Livia's bed is empty. On her side table, a cup of tea, wildwood from the scent of it, sits untouched. Livia pokes her head out from behind the tapestry and motions me forward. I can barely make her out, which means any spies within the walls can't see her either.
You should have drunk the tea. I am careful of her wounded hand. It must hurt.
Her clothes rustle, and a soft click sounds. Stale air and the smell of wet stone wash over me. A hallway stretches before us. We step in, and she closes the door, finally speaking.
An empress who bears her pain with fortitude is an empress who gains respect, she says. My women have spread the rumor that I scorn the tea, that I bear the pain without fear. But bleeding hells, it hurts.
The moment she says it, a familiar compulsion comes over me. The need to heal her, to sing her better.
I can help you, I say. Bleeding skies, how will I explain it to her? We don't have time, sister, she whispers. Come, this passage connects my rooms to his. I've used it before, but be silent. He cannot catch us.
We pad down the hallway toward a tiny crack of light. The muttering begins when we're halfway down. The light is a spy hole, big enough to admit sound, but too small to see through very clearly. I glimpse Marcus, bare of armor, stalking back and forth across his cavernous quarters.
You have to stop doing this when I'm in the throne room.
He digs his hands into his hair.
Do you want to have died just so I can get hurled off the throne for being insane?